the Christian and complete armor. Ephesians 6, verse 12.
Chapter 8.
How Satan labors to corrupt the Christian's mind with error. The second sort of spiritual sins are such as are not only acted in the spirit, but are conversant about spiritual objects proper to the soul's nature, that is, a spirit, and not laid out in carnal passions of fleshly lust, in which the soul acts but as a pander for the body, and the partaker of the delights only by way of sympathy. For as the soul feels the body's pain no other way than by sympathy, so neither doth it share in the pleasures of the flesh by any proper taste it hath of them, but only from its near neighborhood with the body does sympathy with its joy. But in spiritual wickednesses that corrupt the mind, here the soul moves in its own sphere with a delight proper to itself, and there are no less of these than the other. There is hardly a fleshly lust, but hath some spiritual sin analogical to it, as they say there is no species of creatures on the land, but may be patterned in the sea. Thus the heart of man can produce spiritual sins, answering carnal lusts. For whoredom and uncleanness of the flesh, there is idolatry, called in Scripture spiritual idolatry, from which the seat of Antichrist is called spiritual Sodom. For sensual drunkenness, there is a drunkenness of the mind, intoxicating the judgment with error, a drunkenness of the heart in cares and fears. For carnal pride in beauty, riches, honor, there is a spiritual pride of gifts, graces, etc. Now, Satan, in an especial manner, assaults the Christian with such as these. It would require a larger discourse than I can allow to run over the several kinds of these. I shall let many pick out two or three. At first, Satan labors to corrupt the mind with erroneous principles. He was at work at the very first plantation of the gospel, sowing his darnels as soon almost as Christ his wheat, which sprung up as pernicious errors, even in the apostles' times, which made them take the weeding hook into their hands, and in all their epistles labor to countermine Satan in this design. Now, Satan hath a threefold design in this his endeavor to corrupt the minds of men, especially professors, with errors. Section 1. First, he doth this in spite to God, against whom he cannot vent his malice at a higher rate than by corrupting his truth, which God hath so highly honored. Psalms 138, verse 2. Thou hast magnified thy word above all thy name. Every creature bears the name of God, but in his word and truth therein contained, it is written at length, and therefore he is more choice of this than of all his other works. He cares not what becomes of the world and all in it, so he keeps his word and saves his truth. Ere long we shall see the world on a light flame, the heavens and earth shall pass away, but the word of the Lord endures forever. When God will, he can make more such worlds as this, but he cannot make another truth, and therefore he will not lose one jot thereof. Satan, knowing this, sets all his wits on work to deface this and disfigure it by unsound doctrine. The word is the glass in which we see God, and seeing him are changed into his likeness by his spirit. If this glass be cracked, then the conceptions we have of God will misrepresent him unto us, whereas the word in its native clearness sets him out in all his glory upon our eye. Secondly, he endeavors to draw into the spiritual sin of error as the most subtle and effectual means to weaken, if not destroy, the power of godliness in them. The apostle joins the spirit of power and a sound mind together. 2 Timothy 1:7. Indeed, the power of holiness and practice depends much on the soundness of judgment. Godliness is the child of truth, and it must be nursed if we will have it thrive with no other milk than of its own mother. Therefore, we are exhorted to desire the sincere milk of the word, that ye may grow. 1 Peter 2. If this milk be but a little dashed with error, it is not so nutritious. All error, how innocent soever it may seem, like the ivory, draws away the strength of the soul's love from holiness. Hosea tells us, whoredom and wine take away the heart. Now error is spiritual idolatry. Paul speaks of his espousing them to Christ. When a person receives an error, he takes a stranger into Christ's bed. And it is the nature of idolatrous love to take away the wife's heart from her true husband, that she delights not in his company so much as of her idolatrous lover. And do we not see it at this day fulfilled? Do not many show more zeal in contending for one error than for many truths? How strangely are the hearts of many taken off from the ways of God, their love cooled to the ordinances and messengers of Christ, and all this occasioned by some corrupt principle got into their bosoms, which controls Christ and his truth, as Hagar and her son did Sarah and her child. Indeed, Christ will never enjoy true conjunctural love with the soul till, like Abraham, he turns these out of doors. Error is not so innocent a thing as many think it is. It is an unwholesome food to the body that poisons the spirits and surfaces the whole body, which seldom passes away without breaking out into sores. At the knowledge of Christ carries a soul above the pollutions of the world, so error entangles and betrays it to those lusts whose hands it has escaped. Thirdly, Satan, in drawing a soul into a spiritual sin, hath a design to disturb the peace of the church, which it rent and shattered when this fireship comes among them. I hear, saith Paul, there are divisions among you, and I partly believe it. For there must be heresies, 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 18 and 19, implying that divisions are the natural issue of heresy. Error cannot well agree with error, except it be against the truth. Then, indeed, like Pilate and Herod, they are easily made friends. But when truth seems to overcome and the battle is over with that, then they fall out among themselves. And therefore, it is no wonder if it be so troublesome a neighbor to truth. O sir, what a sweet silence and peace was there among Christians a dozen years ago. Methinks that looking back to those blessed days in this respect, though they may also in another way their troubles, yet not so uncomfortable, because that storm united, this scatters the saints' spirits. It's joyous to remember in what unity and love Christians walked, so that the persecutors of those times might have said, as their predecessors did of the saints in primitive times, see how they love one another. But now, alas, they may jeer and say, see how they that loved so dearly are ready to pluck one another's eyes out. Section 1. Use. The application of this shall be only in a word of exaltation to all, especially you who bear the name of Christ by a more eminent profession of him. Oh, beware of this soul infection, this leprosy of the head. I hope you do not think it needless, for it is the disease of the times. This plague is begun, yea, spreads apace, not a flock, a congregation hardly, that hath not this scab among them. Paul was a preacher, the best of us all may write about, and he presses this home upon the saints, yea, in the constant course of his preaching, it made a piece of his sermon. Acts chapter 20, verse 30 and 31. He sets us preachers also on this work. Take heed to yourselves and to all the flock, for I know this, that after my departure shall grievous wolves enter. Also of your own selves shall men arise, speaking perverse things. Therefore, watch. And then he presents his own example, that he hardly made a sermon for several years, but this was part of it, to warn everyone night and day with tears. We need not prophesy what impostors may come upon the stage when we go off. There are too many at present above board of this gang, drawing disciples unto them. And if it be our duty to warn you of them, surely it is yours to watch, lest you by any of them be led into temptation this hour thereof, wherein Satan is let loose in so great a measure to deceive the nations. May you not as easily be soured with this leaven as the disciples whom Christ bids beware. Are you privileged above those famous churches of Galatia and Corinth, many of which were bewitched with false teachers, and in a manner turned to another gospel? Is Satan grown orthodox, or hath his instruments lost their cunning who hunt for souls? In a word, is there not a sympathy between thy corrupt heart and error? Hath thou not a disposition which, like the foams of the earth, makes it natural for these weeds to grow in thy soul? Seest thou not many prostrated by this enemy, who sat upon the mountain of their faith and thought it should never have been removed? Surely they would have taken it ill to have been told, you are the men and women that will decry Sabbaths, which now ye count holy. Ye will turn Pelagians, who now defy the name. You will despise prophecy itself, who now seems so much to honor the prophets. You will throw family duties out of doors. You who dare not now go out of doors till you have prayed there. Yet these, and more than these, are come to pass, and doth it not behove thee, Christian, to take heed lest thou fall also, and that thou mayest not? First, make it thy chief care to get a thorough change of thy heart. If once the root of the matter be in thee, and thou art bottomed by a lively faith on Christ, thou art then safe. I do not say wholly free from all error, but this I am sure, free from engulfing thy soul and damning error. They went out from us, saith St. John, but they were not of us, for if they had been of us, they would no doubt have continued with us. 1 John chapter 2, verse 19. And as if he has said, they had some outward profession and common work of the Spirit with us, which they have either lost or carried over to the devil's quarters, but they never had the unction of the sanctifying Spirit. By this, verse 20, he distinguished them and comforts the sincere ones, who possibly might fear their own fall by their departure. But ye have an unction from the Holy One, and ye know all things. It is one thing to know a truth, and another to know it by unction. An hypocrite may do the former, the saint only the latter. It is this unction which gives the soul the savor of the knowledge of Christ. Those are the fit prey for impostors, who are enlightened but not enlivened. Oh, it is good to have the heart established with grace. This is an anchor, will keep us from being set adrift and carried about with divers and strange doctrines, as the Apostle teaches in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 9. Secondly, ply the work of mortification. Crucify the flesh daily. Heresy, though a spiritual sin, yet by the Apostle reckoned among the deeds of the flesh, Galatians 5:20, because it is occasioned by fleshly motives and nourished by carnal food and fuel. Never any turned heretic, but flesh was at the bottom. Either they served their belly or a lust of pride. It was the way to court or secure their estates and save their lives, as sometimes the reward of truth is fire and faggot. Some evil or another is in the straw when least seen, and therefore it is no wonder heresy should end in the flesh, seeing that they in a manner sprung from it. The rheum, footnote, a discharge from the eyes or nose, and the footnote, in the head, ascends and fumes from the stomach, and returns thither or unto the lungs, which at last fret and ulcerate. Carnal affections first send up their fumes to the understanding, clouding that, yea, bidding it to receive such and such principles for truth, which embraced fall down into the life, corrupting that which the altar of profaneness. So that, Christian, if once thou canst break off thy engagements to the flesh and become a free man, so as not to give thy vote to gratify thy carnal fears or hopes, thou wilt then be a sure friend to truth. Thirdly, wait consciously on the ministry of the word. Satan commonly stops the ear from hearing sound doctrine before he opens it to embrace corrupt. This is the method of souls apostatizing from truth. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 3 and 4. They shall turn their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables. Satan, like a cunning thief, draws the soul out of the world into some lane or corner, and there robs him of the truth. By rejecting of one ordinance, we deprive ourselves of the blessing of all other. Say not that thou prayest to be led into truth. He will not hear thy prayer if thou turnest thy ear from hearing the law. When he sees him play the truant, will whip him to school. If God loves the soul, he will bring him back to the word with shame and sorrow. Fourthly, when you hear any unusual doctrine, though never so pleasing, make not up the match hastily with it. Have some better testimony of it before you open your heart to it. The apostle indeed bids us entertain strangers, for some have entertained angels unawares. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 3. But he would not have you carried about with strange doctrine. Verse 9. By this I am sure some have entertained devils. I confess it is not enough to reject a doctrine, because strange to us, but a ground why we should wait and inquire. Paul marveled that the Galatians were so soon removed from him who had called them unto the grace of Christ, unto another gospel, that they might surely have stayed till they had acquainted Paul with it and asked his judgment. What? No sooner an impostor come into the country and open his pack, but by all his ware at first sight, O friends, were it not more wisdom to pray such new notions over and over again, to search the word and our hearts by it, yea, not to trust our own hearts, but call in counsel from others? If your minister have not so much credit with you, get the most holy, humble, and established Christians you can find. Error is like fish, which must be eaten new, or it will stink. When those dangerous errors sprung up first in New England, oh, how unsettled were many of the churches! What an outcry was made, as if some mine of gold had been discovered. But in a while, when those errors came to their complexion, it was perceived whether they were bound to destroy churches, ordinances, and power of godliness. Then such as feared God, who had stepped aside, returned back with shame and sorrow. End of chapter 8, having been read by Peter John Parisis. None of my audios are copyrighted. Please feel free to make as many copies as you desire to the glory of God.